1. The American Long Rifle. I never in my life saw better rifles or men who shot better than those made in America. Colonel George Hanger, a British officer. On the morning of October 7, 1777, a young rebel named Timothy Murphy spit on his hands and began climbing up a tree in a field not far from Saratoga, New York. His progress was slowed by the weapon he gripped in his hand, but the gun was entirely his reason for getting up in that tree in the first place. Murphy was a Continental Army sergeant and a master marksman, a sniper in so many words. His weapon, a long rifle, was one of the few technologically advanced weapons the ragtag Continentals possessed during the Revolutionary War. His mission? To find and eliminate high-value targets in the ranks of the Redcoats mustering for attack a few hundred yards away. Now, I may be a bit partial to Mr. Murphy, who, like me, was a sniper, but I think it's not much of an exaggeration to say that the good sergeant and the other marksmen with him had the potential to change the Battle of Saratoga, and with that, the whole revolution. They'd already harassed the daylights out of British General John Burgoyne and his troops. Burgoyne had a master plan to cut the American rebellion in two, slicing down New York's Hudson River Valley. He was marching south. Another general was coming north. If the two forces met in the middle, the revolution was done. But Burgoyne was having tough going. The Americans were better fighters than he thought. One reason they were whipping him was their tactics. The British Army depended on close coordination on the battlefield. It was a thing of beauty to look at, assuming the Redcoats weren't shooting at you. Groups of men marched in perfect precision, took their shots together, and made their bayonet charges like a well-oiled machine. But it all relied on well-trained officers and well-timed orders to keep things moving smoothly. The Americans aimed to mess that all up by targeting those officers. In modern times, we'd say they were zeroing in on Burgoyne's lead. Burgoyne couldn't lead his army without its officers. That's where Murph and his fellow snipers came in. Their long-range shots aimed to leave the Redcoat units headless. If they could do that in this battle, the whole revolution might turn around for them. The French king was looking on from the sidelines, wondering if he should support the Americans. If the Americans stopped the Brits here, not only would they have a huge victory, but maybe get some French guns and money to boot. Not that Murphy was thinking about all that as he climbed the tree. He was just looking for a nice target to fire at. Very soon, one rode into view. A British officer, buttons gleaming on his red coat. It was General Simon Fraser, the best British leader on the field, and the man Commander John Burgoyne was counting on to save the British bacon today. Murphy aimed and fired. While that bullet is sailing toward General Fraser and the fate not just of the Brits but maybe the entire American Revolution, let's take a look at the weapon that fired it. American long rifles were adapted from designs first produced by European-born gunsmiths in the 1620s. These had grown from the shorter-barreled, larger-caliber Swiss-German Jaeger hunting rifles used in the forests of Central Europe. The lighter Americanized guns featured barrels of up to 4 feet and often were adorned with nicknames and personalized designs and inscriptions. The biggest difference between muskets and rifles was the rifling in the barrels. Rifling is the series of spiraling grooves cut into the bore of the barrel, which cause the projectile to spin on its axis. This spinning would give the projectile enough stability to dramatically enhance the overall accuracy of the gun. Above all else, this is what differentiated rifles from muskets. Gunmaking was small manufacturing at its best. It was literally a cottage industry. You might have a single master with an apprentice or two creating a weapon for a customer he knew very well from church and the local market. It was a downright poetic activity, as John Dillon put it in his 1924 book, The Kentucky Rifle. From a flat bar of soft iron, hand-forged into a gun barrel, laboriously bored and rifled with crude tools, fitted with a stock hewn from a maple tree in the neighboring forest, and supplied with a lock hammered into shape on the anvil, an unknown smith, in a shop long since silent, fashioned a rifle which changed the whole course of world history, made possible the settlement of a continent, and ultimately freed our country from foreign domination. Light in weight, graceful in line, economical in consumption of powder and lead, fatally precise, distinctly American, it sprang into immediate popularity, and for 100 years was a model often slightly varied, but never radically changed.